Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama says the U.S. is weighing options to events in Iraq, and the union nears agreement that could end the South African mine strike. I'm Frances Alonzo reporting from Washington. President Barack Obama says his national security advisors are preparing a range of options for U.S. assistance to Iraq as it faces an assault by terrorists. Mr. Obama said no American troops will be sent to Iraq. He spoke at the White House at midday today.
Now, Iraq needs additional support to break the momentum of extremist groups and bolster the capabilities of Iraqi security forces. We will not be sending U.S. troops back into combat in Iraq, but I have asked my national security team to prepare a range of other options that could help support Iraq security forces, and I'll be reviewing those options in the days ahead.
Mr. Obama went on to say that any U.S. assistance to Iraq must be matched with a serious and sincere effort by Iraq's leaders to work together and set aside differences and to improve their security forces. The president added that Iraq's leaders must demonstrate a willingness to make hard decisions and compromises. Meanwhile, the Islamic militants from the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant continue to make small gains on their push southward along the Euphrates River to the Iraqi capital of Baghdad. The militants took a handful of small towns. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Crowd of Shiite worshippers in the iconic shrine city of Karbala applauded Friday as senior cleric Abdul Mahdi al-Karbalahi, representing Iraq's top Shiite spiritual leader, Sheikh Ali Sistani, urged Iraqi citizens to volunteer and defend their country against Sunni ISIL militants. He says that Iraq is going through an extremely critical period and that it is the patriotic duty of its sons who are able to bear arms to defend their country by volunteering to join the security forces. Hundreds of mostly Shiite volunteers lined up in front of army recruiting posts in Baghdad and cities to the south and east. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The head of South Africa's Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union says the group has agreed in principle to accept a new wage offer that could end a strike that has crippled the industry for months. The AMCU president said today that the union had agreed to a deal with three major platinum producers, but the SAP news agency says the group's leader says there's still some issues that require consultation. U.S. federal investigators say as many as 15 Somali American men recently traveled to Syria to join Islamist militants who've been fighting to topple President Bashar al-Assad's government. U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation agents in the northern state of Minnesota believe the men traveled from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area over the last few months. An FBI spokesman said Thursday that the authorities are trying to identify other Somali Americans who may consider travel to Syria to join militant groups. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe says the situation in eastern Ukraine remains volatile, with eight of its observers being held by armed groups. With more, VOA's Anita Powell reports.
OSCE spokesman Michael Bachurku on Friday gave few details on the condition of the eight kidnapped monitors, but said the organization is confident that they are in fairly good condition. He said no group has owned up to their abduction more than 2 weeks ago.
The special monitoring mission to Ukraine has unfortunately not yet reestablished communication with the four monitors from the Donetsk team. We do, however, appeal to anyone or any groups that are holding our colleagues to make immediate contact.
Of the eight abducted monitors, the OSCE has identified the nationalities of four. They are from Switzerland, Estonia, Turkey, and Denmark. The nationalities of the other four have not been made public. Anita Powell, VOA News, Kiev.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says it's time to banish sexual violence to the history books. Kerry made the call in London today at the close of an international summit on ending sexual violence in conflict zones. Summit co-host British Foreign Secretary William Hague and U.S. actress and U.N. Special Envoy Angelina Jolie also urge for action. I'm Frances Alonzo in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
2 months ago in mid-April, more than 200 girls were kidnapped from their schoolhouse in northeastern Nigeria. Since then, protests nationwide and around the world have demanded their return, and countries around the globe have offered to help. But the girls remain missing.
That's Heather Murdoch reporting from Abuja. Details coming up.
Also in the news, the head of South Africa's Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union says the group has agreed in principle to accept a new wage offer that could end a strike that has crippled the industry for months.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Cameroon, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the head of South Africa's Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union, AMQ, says the group has agreed in principle to accept a new wage offer that could end a strike that has crippled the industry for months. AMQ President Joseph Mothendwa said today that the union had agreed to deal with three major platinum producers. But the SAPA news agency's Mothendwa added there were still some issues that required consultation. Yesterday, leaders of the Lonmin, Anglo-American Platinum, and Impala Platinum companies proposed a plan that included a 20% wage increase for workers. If accepted, the deal would end a five-month-old strike affecting about 70,000 workers. The three mines normally account for about 40% of the global platinum output.
Two months ago, in mid-April, more than 200 girls were kidnapped from their schoolhouse in northeastern Nigeria. Since then, protests nationwide and around the world have demanded their return, and countries around the globe have offered help. But the girls remain missing. Heather Murdoch reports from Abuja that analysts say the time for ordinary solutions is over.
The girls were snatched from a remote town in northeastern Nigeria on April 14th, and families are devastated. More than 50 girls escaped by jumping out of vehicles and running through the bush, but most remain missing. Amina was one of those who fled before militants could reach their hiding spot. She says men in uniform came to their school dorms around 11 at night. Initially, the girls thought the men were soldiers there to protect them from Boko Haram, the Islamist militant group that has killed thousands of people, including hundreds of children in their schools. When the men set their school on fire, Amina and other girls knew they were not soldiers. Two weeks after the kidnapping, mothers of the kidnapped girls organized a march on the capital, and activists from across Nigeria and around the world mobilized, demanding the rescue of the girls. Amid the international attention, Boko Haram released a video that shows about 100 girls in the bush, and local leaders confirmed they were the kidnapped victims. In it, Abubakar Shekau, who claims to lead the group, threatens to sell the girls as wives and kidnap more women if imprisoned Boko Haram members are not released. Some Nigerian officials have said they will not negotiate with the terrorist group, fearing it will encourage more kidnappings. But University of Abuja Criminology and Social Sciences professor Femi Odikunle agrees with some analysts who say the girls will never be freed unless the government agrees to swap them for prisoners.
I believe that the government should go out of his way to make deals with the Boko Haram people or their representatives to get the girls released. Because after all, if the girls are released, you could still go ahead and pursue. But militarily, if you try to attack them, you are likely to kill, to get the girls killed. You won't get the Boko Haram, you won't get your girls.
If the girls are rescued or released, analysts say they are likely to go home traumatized, potentially victims of sexual violence.
The rescue operation.
What do we want?
Result from the rescue operation.
Why shall we stop?
At a daily vigil in the Nigerian capital, Hadiza Bala Usman, one of the organizers of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, says there is no doubt that the girls have already suffered trauma.
being held by terrorists is a traumatic experience. So indeed, the girls would be traumatized. To the extent that you're held against your will, you're held by terrorists, you're snatched away from your school, you were snatched away at gunpoint.
Protesters say their rallies are met with increasing distrust from the government. And after 2 months, neither Boko Haram nor Nigerian security forces have given any indication that the girls are any closer to coming home. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, is appealing to the international community for aid for South Sudan. Specifically, it wants $97.2 million for a range of life-saving emergency humanitarian interventions for internally displaced persons, or IDPs. IOM, in coordination with the Danish Refugee Council, recently relocated 2,500 people from a site at the UN mission in Malakal, Upper Nile State, to an adjacent location that could hold thousands more people. Harish Murthy is the IOM spokesperson in Juba. He spoke with me about the operation and how the requested funding will be used.
The main reasons why the relocation took place is because the current POC site in the UN base in Malakal is overcrowded and the space is not enough. And with the rainy season, a lot of the sections in the POC are getting flooded and a lot of stagnant water, which is raising the threat level for waterborne diseases. And this is the season when endemic diseases emerge. So what has happened is through the CCM cluster, as well as through a partnership with the United Nations mission in South Sudan, new POC site adjacent to the current POC was located, and site has been prepared to relocate up to 10,000 people. The relocation is currently relocated over 2,500 because the figures are still need to be verified because it's an ongoing process. So that is the current situation there right now.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this new relocation site? I know you said that it was adjacent to the previous site where the people were located.
The site being relocated is exactly adjacent to the current POC site, which we are now calling POC3 or the new POC site. And the new POC site is actually segmented in sector. So relocation started from the POC site 4, which is currently occupied by 18,000 people, to the new POC site. So we are actually relocating people based on needs and how their current living conditions are in the old site. The current situation in Malakal is quiet, but the situation, as is the case in the rest of South Sudan, remains highly unpredictable. So that is the situation right now in Malakal. And of course, the rainy season is not making things easier. There's a lot of flooding that's taking place in the POC site. Drainage is not proper. The relocation of IDPs at this time is perfectly suited because the new POC site is best prepared to handle the current weather conditions in Malakal.
Is there any outbreak at this time of any communicable diseases such as cholera, hepatitis E, or measles?
Currently, there has been no verified and reported cases of cholera at the POC site in Malakal. However, Juba has already experienced over 1,000 cases of cholera in recent weeks, and there is a great concern cholera and other endemic waterborne diseases could emerge in the POC sites across South Sudan. So one of the reasons why relocation is also taking place at this time is to mitigate the threat of such an outbreak, given the conditions in the old POC site in Malakal, or congestion, people living close proximity to one another, hygiene standards. These are all possibilities or conditions under which diseases could emerge.
You all are appealing for additional funding. What will this money be used for?
Funding will be used for a range of activities IOM is currently involved in, which will span camp coordination, camp management, expansion of more POC sites. So when I say expansion, preparing the site, digging drainage systems, installing water treatment systems in POC sites where we are active, namely in Bentiu, also at the new POC site in Juba, which we are also finalizing relocations for, as well as for health-related activities, vaccination of IDPs against cholera, also setting up cholera treatment centers inside the POCs, and also shelter, providing people with shelter materials, providing people with basic household non-food items so that they can live up through the rainy season.
Looking ahead in the months to come, what are some of your biggest concerns?
In the past month or so, the UN is forecasting a severe food insecurity in South Sudan, which could affect hundreds of thousands of people across the country. So the needs will definitely grow in the coming months. So funding will go towards those needs.
That was Harish Murthy, the IOM spokesperson in Juba. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Over 200 girls remain missing more than 2 months after being kidnapped from northeastern Nigeria by Boko Haram. U.S. federal investigators say as many as 15 Somali-American men recently traveled to Syria to join Islamist militants. And the UN Refugee Agency is investigating reports that Chad is turning back refugees from neighboring Central African Republic. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
U.S. federal investigators say as many as 15 Somali-American men recently traveled to Syria to join Islamist militants who have been fighting to topple President Bashar al-Assad's government. U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation FBI agents in the northern state of Minnesota believe the men traveled from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area over the last few months. The Twin Cities have a large Somali community. FBI spokesman Kyle Lovin said yesterday that authorities are trying to identify other Somali Americans who may be considering travel to Syria to join militant groups. In a VOA interview, he said authorities are also investigating how the young men may have become radicalized. The FBI says militants linked to the Somali-based al-Shabaab group launched a similar recruitment effort in the U.S. shortly after the al-Qaeda-linked group was founded in 2007. Officials say at least two dozen Somali Americans, mostly from the Minneapolis area, have joined the group in Somalia.
The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, is investigating reports that Chad is turning back refugees from neighboring Central African Republic. The unconfirmed reports indicate an unspecified number of people were denied entry into Chad at Sido, a border entry point south of the town of Sar. UN officials said that denial of entry would be a violation of international law on the forced return of refugees. They interviewed displaced persons who say they had walked 300 miles over 4 months to reach safety. They often hid in the bush along the way to avoid attacks. Many are women and children suffering from severe malnutrition. Some are receiving treatment at a hospital in Gore. In addition to those escaping the country's violence, about 550,000 have been displaced within the country.
Coming up on 19 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Sunday, June 15th, is Elder Abuse Awareness Day. The World Health Organization describes elder abuse as a global social issue affecting the health and human rights of millions of people. It estimates up to 6% of the elderly are abused at home, with many cases going unreported. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The UN predicts the number of people 60 years old and above will reach 1.2 billion by 2025. That's more than double the figure recorded in 1995. And as the global population ages, the UN says elder abuse is expected to rise. In Pretoria, South Africa, Nicodemus Chipfupa is among those campaigning for the rights of older people. He's the regional director for Southern Africa for HelpAge International.
Elder abuse is a universal problem encountered in many countries. with little recourse at national level, where governments in some cases may not have specific policies to encounter and remedy where such abuse is taking place.
He says there's a wide range of abuse against the elderly.
Physical, emotional, sexual, psychological abuses, and in some cases, discrimination and denial of rights for older persons, thereby taking them as sub-persons in their own nations.
And that abuse can be violent.
For example, on witchcraft accusations in the case of Africa, or in circumstances where an older person or an older woman is suffering from Alzheimer's as a form of dementia. They are labeled as a witch and violently killed, their property torched.
Chipfupa says some elderly women are raped because of the myth that having sex with an older person can cure someone of HIV/AIDS. The HelpAge International Regional Director says elderly who receive government assistance are also targets.
In some cases, like in South Africa, where older persons receive a social grant, families abuse them and take the money using it for their own purposes without even consulting the older persons. And in such situations, the police having no recourse and not being helpful at all.
Abuse comes in other forms as well, he says. For example, many who have jobs in the informal sector have no pensions or health insurance to rely on in old age.
With old age, non-communicable diseases begin to increase, and people really need access to health services. And there are no medical insurances which they could contribute to and lead to supporting them at old age, as it were. And therefore, older persons find themselves hit hard when they seek and require medical services.
To remedy such problems, there's a growing call for a UN convention on the rights of older people. HelpAge says such a convention would, quote, set standards prohibiting violence against older men and women that currently do not exist in international human rights law, and the convention would ensure victims have access to the justice system. Support for the convention is being gathered through the Age Demands Action Campaign, which includes a petition. The goal is to collect 300,000 signatures. More than 200,000 have been collected so far. The petition says governments have an obligation to uphold the rights of older people and protect them from discrimination. A UN working group on aging will meet in July in New York to gather information and evidence on the need for the convention. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
While there has been substantial research into homelessness in South Africa, the issue of homeless persons with mental illness has received scant attention from researchers, service providers, policymakers, and local authorities. Very little is known about this group of people living on the fringes of society. Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg.
Snow-capped hills and sub-zero temperatures signal that winter has arrived in South Africa. For the homeless in Hillbrow, an inner-city residential neighbourhood in Johannesburg, survival in the harsh winter temperatures is tough. Sibizuzu Fuluni is homeless and says he's been living on the streets for many years.
Yes, a lot of people die here on the street.
When it's closed, there on the shop, we just make the blanket to sleep the others there by the shop ride. Our blanket we put on the train. I can show you our blanket.
In the middle of a bustling street in Hillbrow, Faluni lifts a heavy metal drain cover to reveal a grubby pile of blankets and clothes wrapped in a tight ball. There is a vast amount of research about South Africa's homeless, but very little is known about homeless people suffering from mental illness. New research by Unotida Moyo from the University of Johannesburg, in conjunction with the Centre for Social Development in Africa, shed some light on the group of people living on Johannesburg streets. Moyo was motivated to pursue research into homelessness and mental health when her mentally ill brother went missing and nearly ended up on the streets.
So I discovered that I think there is a need for families department, different departments, to really assist these people so that they don't land on the street without any help. Because you can see even their health is compromised. They die on the streets, it's cold, they die on the streets, it's HIV-related diseases, tuberculosis, it's a lot.
Moyo says that mental illness can increase the risk of homelessness, while the harsh conditions on the street are likely to produce and aggravate symptoms of mental health. The nature of mental illness, she says, makes it difficult for homeless people to negotiate street life and meet their needs for food, safety, shelter and treatment. The homeless are particularly vulnerable to violence in Johannesburg. Police brutality is a common complaint on the streets of Hillbrow and became particularly problematic when South Africa hosted the World Cup in 2010.
Yeah, I take my blankets, beat us with a sweeper, spray us with a spray can, chase us away, say don't want us here on the street.
Fukuli Ntandande, the station commander of Hillbrow Police Station, disputes the accusations, but says that the city's police alone cannot help the homeless and that interagency collaboration is needed.
I said I'm not denying that it's happening. It may be happening. I don't know. But let's work together to avoid such things.
Progressive social policies and legislation such as the Bill of Rights of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa and the Mental Health Care Act of 2002 do have provisions for people with mental health issues. However, Moyo found that the rights of many homeless people with mental illness are violated because services for them often lag behind policy and legislation. During her interviews, homeless people complained of hostility from some health professionals and of having to wait longer than other patients at clinics and hospitals. But resources are stretched. A local nurse complained that the psychiatric ward was short-staffed and not able to cope with the demand. Professor Eleanor Ross at the university oversaw the research and backs up this complaint.
Homelessness would also appear to be increasing without a concomitant increase in health and welfare personnel to cater for their needs.
She argues that there is a need for further research to evaluate the effectiveness of services for the homeless and homeless mentally ill people in Hillbrow. Patients who are homeless and mentally ill and need regular treatment often do not return for follow-up treatment. Habitual drug users are reluctant to go into shelters because of the strict rules they have to adhere to. And when treatment for drug addiction is given, they often relapse.
The results would appear to reflect the failure of housing, welfare, education and healthcare policies. Need to be viewed against the backdrop of poverty, unemployment and violence in South Africa.
Despite the adverse living conditions, the research note revealed that the homeless and homeless mentally ill groups relate well to each other, but the latter tend to depend heavily on others for support. Cello is 23 years old and has been living on the streets for a decade. He looks after his friend who is mentally ill and homeless. Cello says that they take care of each other, and if they see that someone amongst them is mentally ill, they will help that person get food, ensure they have a bath if there is an opportunity, and look out for them on the street. For Cello, he says it is not difficult. They are used to helping each other where they can. The research paper recommends that better strategies be drawn up and more research carried out to give a better understanding of this group on the fringes of society. Crucially, the factors driving people onto the streets, including those with mental illness, need to be addressed. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehei Suhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Put
put your flags up in the sky.
Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. In northeastern Nigeria, more than 200 girls remain missing after being kidnapped by Boko Haram 2 months ago. U.S. federal investigators say as many as 15 Somali men recently traveled to Syria to join Islamist militants. And the U.N. Refugee Agency is investigating reports that Chad is turning back refugees from neighboring Central African Republic. Coming up, music from Cameroon, and in our feature segment, 21st century technology is causing major changes in the music industry. I'm Kim Lewis with Yeheyes Wuhib, and this is Africa News Tonight. Sports with Sunny is next.
Put your flags up in the sky.
And, of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Friday, Sunny.
Happy Friday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand it was a disappointing start for Cameroon at the World Cup football tournament.
Kim, Mexico defeated Cameroon Friday 1-0 in the opening match for both teams at the World Cup football tournament in Brazil. The game was played in a steady rain in Brazil's northeastern coastal city of Natal. Mexico's Oribe Peralta had the game's only goal, scoring off a rebound in the 61st minute. The rain and the result definitely dampened the spirit of the Cameroonian Lions, who were hoping to bounce back in Brazil after a disappointing performance at the 2010 FIFA World Cup in South Africa, where they lost all three of their group matches. Once again, final from Natal on Friday, Mexico won, Cameroon nil. There are two more World Cup matches on Friday. The Netherlands take on defending champion Spain and Salvador, Brazil, in a rematch of the 2010 World Cup final. And Chile will challenge Australia in Cuiabá, Brazil. The World Cup officially kicked off Thursday with host Brazil scoring a 3-1 victory over Croatia in Sao Paulo. Barcelona star Neymar scored two goals for the Brazilians, who are bidding for a record-extending sixth World Cup title. But Neymar's second goal proved especially controversial. It came off a penalty kick in the 71st minute. Japanese referee Yuichi Nishimura awarded the penalty when Brazil's Fred went down casually in the box. Croatia's Dejan Lovren had placed his hand on Fred's shoulder, but the contact didn't appear nearly enough to bring down the striker. The Croatian players were furious. They followed Nishimura to the end line, but the ruling stood. Brazil's third goal came from Oscar, while an own goal by Brazil's Marcelo accounted for Croatia's score. VOA Scott Bob watched Brazil's victory from the country's famous Copacabana beach in Rio de Janeiro, and he tells us about the reaction from Brazilian fans there.
Brazil erupted with joy as its team scored its first goal of the Football World Cup. The point erased moments of agony following an own goal that gave rival Croatia the first goal of the tournament. The Brazilians played well, said Australian Paul Clark, as he had his hair braided after the game.
They played very well. They had possession for most of the game, and they held on to it well.
During the match, demonstrators protesting the high cost of the games marched past the fans in Copacabana. A protest earlier in the day was dispersed by police using tear gas. Fans Fabiana Lima and Suzanne Saliba said they sympathized with the protesters' cause, but not with the protest.
I think it's inexorable. We knew it would happen. So, as much as we are discontent, I think this moment is the moment to aproveitar a Copa.
os problemas, mas assim, os problemas que a gente tem, a culpa não é da Copa.
Brasil!
The fans partied late into the night. The Festival of Football begins in earnest Friday with the first full day of matches and ends a month from now with the final in this city's Maracanã Stadium. Scott Bobb, VOA News, Rio de Janeiro.
Put your flags up in the sky, in the sky.
Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet, and we'll bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
I mentioned Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOAsunny, and my Twitter handle is at @VOAsunnySports. I asked my Facebook friends what they thought of the World Cup opener between Brazil and Croatia. Let's sample a few comments. Sunday Kofi, writing from Kano, Nigeria, referred to Neymar's penalty kick and the Japanese referee by saying simply, "The referees and officials spoiled the game." Matthew Sesk Mwenya Jr., writing from Lusaka, Zambia, agreed with our friend Sunday in Kano. Matthews writes, "The officials spoiled the game. That's my opinion. But congrats to the Samba boys from Brazil." Austin Njoku, writing from Abuja, Nigeria, took a gentler approach to the performance by the Japanese referee. Austin writes, "Officials are prone to mistakes. After all, they're only human. They cannot stop us from catching fun. This is going to be a thrilling and entertaining competition," writes Austin. Joshua Gamfi, writing from the University of Ghana, says, "Not bad for a World Cup opening match. A good win for the hosts. It should be a great tournament this year, Sonny." I'll have more World Cup news, but first, the San Antonio Spurs defeated the Miami Heat Thursday night 107-86 to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the National Basketball Association Finals. VOA's Tadia Beje tells us more about San Antonio's Game 4 victory in Miami, Florida.
There is no gentle way of saying it. The Spurs simply demolished the Heat. No ifs or buts. Right from the tip-off, they came out strong and dominated the game to the very end. Sure, the Spurs had momentum on their side after convincingly winning Game 3 on Tuesday, but they were the huge underdogs in this game. They also played in a hostile environment at the Heat's own American Airlines Arena. As usual, the Spurs moved the ball fast and furious. They were aggressive and in constant motion. Their scoring statistics were also great. They made 57% of their shots and 43% from three-point range. They also scored 55 points in the first half. At one point, the Spurs were leading the Heat by 25 points. Small forward Kawhi Leonard played well again. He scored 20 points, grabbed 14 rebounds, and defended Heat star LeBron James quite well. Tony Parker had 19 points. Tim Duncan added 10 points and 11 rebounds. The Spurs' defense was impressive as well, holding the Heat to 45% shooting. After the game, Spurs head coach Greg Popovich assessed his team's victory.
"I'm pleased that they performed as well as they did while we've been in Miami, and that's about as far as it goes. Now we've got to go back home and play as well or better."
The Heat's performance was, to put it mildly, disappointing. They lacked effort and energy. It appeared their defense took the night off. They gave up way too many easy buckets and open three-point shots. The only highlight was LeBron James, who scored 28 points and grabbed 8 rebounds. The rest of the team played poorly. Dwayne Wade had only 10 points on 3 of 13 shooting. LeBron James reflected on his team's performance.
"I mean, they smashed us. 2 straight home games, got off to awful starts. You know, they came in and, you know, was much better than us in these 2 games. It's just that simple."
LeBron says that his team has to respond in a big way after losing two straight home games. He feels his team can still win this series, despite their big deficit. No team in NBA Finals history has ever come back from a 3-1 hole to win the championship. So does this signal the end of the Heat's dream of a three-peat? Well, we'll just wait and see. Game 5 takes place Sunday night in San Antonio, Texas. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Tadia Beje.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.
And when you visit VOANews.com, make sure you check out the Sunny Side of Sports blog, in which I write about a variety of sporty topics. My latest blog post is titled World Cup Goal Line Technology. Brazil 2014 marks the first time the technology is being used at the International Football Fiesta. Meanwhile, on the sidelines of the World Cup, the female chief of Sierra Leone football has been honored, as we hear now from our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
Sierra Leone's Football Association president, Isha Johansson, received a standing ovation at the FIFA Congress when FIFA president Sepp Blatter acknowledged she is the only female in the world currently heading a national football federation. Johansson is the third female national federation head after Liberia's Izet Sombo-Wesley and Burundi's Lydia Nsereka. Among FIFA's 209 members, Africa stands out as the only place in the world to have had a female head of a national federation. Elsewhere, fans are in for a bumper treat tomorrow Saturday. Colombia play Greece in Belo Horizonte before Uruguay and Costa Rica clash in Fortaleza. Then England and Italy engage in the heart of the Amazon tropical forest in the city of Mananas before the Ivory Coast encounter Japan in Recife. On Sunday, Switzerland play Ecuador in Brasilia. France engage Honduras in Porto Alegre as Argentina and Bosnia-Herzegovina clash in Rio de Janeiro.
Thanks, Mark. That's our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma. If you're just tuning in now to the Voice of America, Mexico defeated Cameroon Friday 1-0 in the opening match for both teams at the World Cup football tournament in Brazil. Mexico's Oribe Peralta had the game's only goal, scoring off a rebound in the 61st minute. So in the Group A standings, it's now Brazil with 3 points, Mexico with 3 points, and Croatia and Cameroon at the bottom with no points. Once again, the final from Natal on Friday, Mexico 1, Cameroon 0. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Have a good weekend, everyone. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC.
In our feature segment, we focus on microbes and malnutrition. And next, 21st century technology causing major changes in the music industry. But first, some music. Here is Julius Essoco of Cameroon with Decom.
Missa morita de nongo nambunga Jepe sepe bori puri majita Nabi nombo petembusa Neima toki sane Omwate ma, omwate wa Missa morita de yo nambodi Bulia di latana, obi minya masu nutu yasu minyenge mese malebon disimato kisane. Ebi
sa morita so do ti na uyenge umba pete mba umba pete wa numbote wande numbopete mba rene Chepe ma die, chepe ma die. Ele mule mamongo, wao la kise. Pa tabole mule mle na la kise. Nasi binga babunya, bomele po. Nari bene dube. Nasibinga bomunya mo pumere po nari benende malakisa Kamba Arikom Waobi Umba mule mamwami o sonarikom Bale neyongi ola kise Nasi binga babunya mwabo menepo Ele mule ma tila kise Amumba dombelongo banaya arikom tilakisei
Julius Asoka of Cameroon with Dicom.
Well, inside every one of us, trillions of microbes are busy in our intestines. They help extract nutrients from the food we eat. But that colony of bacteria and other organisms can be damaged by malnutrition. And a new study of children in South Asia indicates the damage can last even after the child is treated. Health reporter Art Chimes has more.
Malnutrition is one of the leading health challenges facing young children in developing countries. Death rates are down thanks in part to supernutritional food therapies and programs to treat malnourished kids. But microbiologist Jeffrey Gordon of Washington University in St. Louis says malnutrition has long-term consequences.
Stunting, problems with immune function, reductions in IQ persist despite these therapeutic interventions. And the question is, why?
Children who go through a period of malnutrition may be at a permanent disadvantage. In a new study in Bangladesh, Gordon and his colleagues used DNA to study the intestinal microbes, also called the microbiota, which normally change or mature as a child gets older. They found that children who were undernourished had what they describe as an immature microbiota, even after getting the standard therapy of antibiotics and food supplements.
Well, the therapeutic food caused them to gain weight, but it didn't affect the state of maturity of their microbiota.
Gordon thinks reversing the effects of malnutrition requires not just healthy food, but also a gut full of healthy, mature microbes.
Whether healthy growth is possible with this immaturity, we don't think so.
A lot of work stands between this study and better treatment for malnutrition, which might include supplements containing good bacteria, along with improved therapeutic foods. But the first author of the paper, Washington University MD PhD student Satish Subramanian says he and his colleagues are encouraged by the results of their research.
And this gives us hope that through this study and others to come, that we will better understand the variation of microbiota structure across different children, across varying nutritional status, and possibly across different geographies.
The research paper by Subramanian, Gordon, and their colleagues is published online in the journal Nature. For VOA News, this is Art Chimes in St. Louis.
"21st century technology is causing major changes in the music industry. Music streaming, digital downloads on the internet, and live concerts marketed in social media. Music and radio industry executives say music is moving to the live marketplace. Musicians tell VOA's Elizabeth Lear in Los Angeles that the technology is liberating."
What? Suburban Skies is a band that says it can promote itself and control its destiny thanks to 21st century technology.
"Social media is a wonderful thing, and being able to control your own art and not be signed by a record label, to be your own record label is, I think, liberating."
Founder Nick Sherwin says the internet has created more opportunities for musicians. He says the key to success is giving fans a multifaceted experience.
"The most important thing is content. You have to have songs, videos, to be able to get up and do this. But I think it's extremely important to do shows, to build your brand, to build your reputation."
In a recent discussion about the future of the music business, industry experts say with CD sales declining in the U.S., more musicians are hitting the stage. Rob Light is head of music at the talent agency Creative Artists Agency.
"The majority of the income for artists now is coming from the live marketplace."
Along with the popularity of live music, there has also been an explosion of music festivals, including events that feature electronic dance music, again with the help of social media.
"Someone could make it in their bedroom and put it out there. And people can gain fans that way online without anyone's help. And that's absolutely helped the growth of dance music."
Pasquale Rotella's company, Insomniac, produces electronic dance music festivals in several different countries.
"It's the lights, they have the dancers, it's a very visual show. It's a different environment versus your standard rock show."
Fans are also getting music through digital downloads and online streaming services. But they're still tuning in to the radio, says Bob Pittman, the head of radio conglomerate Clear Channel Communications.
"In this era of streaming services, radio listeners have increased. And if you look at the research, 70% of Americans, we say, where did you discover the music you buy in your music collection? 70% say FM radio."
But Bob Light predicts radio will become obsolete.
"I don't believe that terrestrial radio will be as relevant to a 12-year-old today in 5 or 6 years. And if you're going to look forward, I think they're going to get their information, that exact information, from other places and other sources."
With what seems like limitless places for people to go and find music, Nick Sherwin is not worried. He just wants to reach those who like his style of music with the help of the internet. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Linus Rimkus, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A disturbing pattern of arrests continues in Rwanda, where dozens of people have been detained by authorities for alleged state security offenses. Many were held without formal charges. The Rwandan government has been cited frequently for persecuting its opponents. Its reach has sometimes crossed borders. In March, South Africa expelled three Rwandan envoys it believes were linked to the killing of Rwanda's former chief of intelligence and an attack against Rwanda's former chief of defense staff. Both men had fallen out with the regime. Faced with an organized movement of anti-regime former government officials and a rebel movement operating in the neighboring Democratic Republic of the Congo, Rwandan government officials have defended their actions. They say they must take action against people they believe want to use violence against their people or the government. The United States is deeply concerned by the dozens of arrests that have taken place in the past 2 months. Some individuals were held for over a month without charge and were unable to communicate with lawyers or their families. The United States supports all lawful efforts to identify individuals who seek to use violence against the Rwandan people and government. But in a democratic society, individuals may not be arrested or detained without recourse to due process of law to certain minimum guarantees. That includes the right to challenge in a court the charges and witnesses against them. In a democratic society, all are equal before the law, prosecutors and the defendant. It is for a judge to determine guilt, not the government, no matter how well-intentioned it believes its motives. The United States calls on the Rwandan government to account for individuals arrested over the past 2 months in relation to these cases and currently in custody. It also must respect the rights under Rwandan law and international human rights law of individuals detained and arrested. We also call on authorities there to fully respect freedom of expression, including for members of the press, so that they may investigate, report, and facilitate discussion on issues of public concern.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials.
Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit voafootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at voafootball.com.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.